Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Why We Create. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Why We Create is a podcast that explores the behind-the-scenes stories from artists, inventors, and the daringly creative.
Grab your nifty 50, set up your softbox, and say cheese, because today we are talking about portrait photography. Joshua Jordan takes us through how he likes to take photos and why it's so important to him. Let's get into it. Welcome to Why We Create. It's a podcast where we sit down with artists and ask them how, and importantly, why they do what they do. My name is Christopher. I'm one of the hosts, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Megan.
Hi, everybody.
Today, we are getting into the world of cameras, lighting, and Photoshop because we are speaking with Joshua Jordan. Joshua, thanks for talking
thanks
with us today.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, in your own words, we always like to ask this at the very beginning. Who are you and what do you do?
My name is Joshua Jordan. I'm a photographer based out of Connecticut. I would say a portrait photographer. I focus a lot on headshots. I do fashion work on the side, and I just got into product photography. So that's really my new thing. Like, I just shot a can of soda. It took me 4 hours, but I did shoot the can of soda at my studio the other day, learning the lighting, the glares.
Some people might underrate how difficult it is to do product photography, but
I thought it was going to be very easy. I thought it wasn't easy at all.
You are used to shooting things that move. And with, like, product photography, what's great is, you know, they don't have to move. But, you know, I'm sure there's, like, a lot of things you don't consider, like reflective surfaces and all
Correct.
That. But like you said, you are best known for like your portrait work. Is there like a piece that like really got you into portraiture, or like a piece that you're like best known for?
I shot headshots for a while, but shooting family members, like I shot my grandparents. Mm-hmm. My grandfather did pass a couple years ago, but I always shot my grandparents. And then once I shot them, the connection to portraits really grew on me. So then I started shooting children portraits, and then it turned into headshots, which now I shoot a lot of realtors, business owners, anybody that needs a headshot.
It's a good rotating business. Everybody needs headshots.
Cool. I always tell people that you got to update them frequently, you know, because some people will come 10 years after and they'll come into my studio and I won't even know who they are. You know, I won't recognize them from their photo.
Yeah. Think about like your driver's license or your passport photo. I change my hair color fairly often. Does not look like me, neither one of them. I could hold those two photos side by side. It probably look like two different people. So
this whole podcast is just a PSA or a reminder for people to get their headshots done.
It's true. It's true.
And a reminder to all of the Walkam employees to get their headshots done.
Do a reshoot.
I was wondering if you could actually go into that a little bit more and like how you started with photography. You said that you were taking photos of your grandparents. Is that like how you started in photography, and when was that?
I started about 9 years ago. I actually just wanted to take nicer photos than what my iPhone was taking. So I went to Best Buy, grabbed a camera, learned how to take photos, and then it slowly grew. I shot landscapes. I've shot everything from landscapes to weddings to birds to everything. And then it just kept growing, and then it turned into a business. I got my LLC, and now that's what I do.
What was it like when you first started? What were some of those things you, going from shooting on your iPhone, being like, oh, okay, obviously, like, it's a good camera, but it's not the best. Like, what was that transition like?
It was actually very tough, and I can see why a lot of people pick up the camera and then they don't continue, because it's very frustrating. I watched a lot of YouTube. YouTube taught me everything that I knew, basically, like how to edit, how to shoot in manual, how to light subjects. It was a learning curve, and it was very frustrating, but once I got over that hump, it's probably the best thing I've ever discovered in my life is picking up a camera.
Shout out to YouTube University. I'm always really proud of
it's
people.
So great.
I mean, there's so much information. There's so many good tutorials and how-tos on YouTube. There's a lot of really smart people sharing information on every topic. And then there's people like yourself that are like, I really want to figure this out and take the time to learn it. And then, yeah, make this not just a hobby, but like a side job, and to make this like your main thing, which is super rad. Cool.
Like learning something on YouTube and then going outside and practicing what I learned.
Yeah.
Like it's amazing. And when people ask me, well, how'd you get into photography, or how'd you get, you know, so good? Not patting myself on the back, but I would say, hey, it was YouTube, really. YouTube's done it all for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions is, like, how did you get as good as you are today? And, yeah, the
YouTube taught Academy. Me how to retouch. And that's why the Wacom tablet, I'm a retoucher, which nice. I don't, you guys probably know what that is, right?
Maybe yeah. describe yeah. it okay. for folks. How would you describe a retoucher?
For everyone
yeah,
who doesn't
for the people.
So, like, a retoucher, for example, is I take a headshot or a portrait, I make somebody look as perfect as they can. Not saying they aren't perfect in front of the camera, but I take care of all the flaws, flyaways. I take care of everything. I make them as best as they can be.
I was watching one YouTube video about retouching, and the guy was like, you just want to make it look like it's like their best day they've ever had.
Right.
And yeah. like that's the goal. And just give them that confidence of like, you looked great that day.
Yeah. When I first started, a couple of people looked like Avatar, but that's because I was learning how to, you know, I didn't really know how to, you know, make it not as much because some of the retouching is, you know, it's kind of intense.
Sure.
But, totally.
Once I got over the avatar phase, people started looking like people and it's worked out well.
That's really
You
cool.
and I have like a pretty similar trajectory of like photography, actually. I started about like 9-10 years ago as well, learned everything through YouTube. I went to school for art and video, never
oh,
touched
nice.
A camera when I went to college for whatever
yeah.
reason. I got my first DSLR, then realized the DSLR took photos and was like, oh, this is great, you know? Yeah, what was your first camera?
Mine was a Sony NEX-5. So it wasn't great, nothing against Sony. But yeah, it wasn't great because it didn't do everything that I needed. Then I upgraded, I went to a Canon, and then I went to Fuji for a little while because I love the Fuji colors. Then I went
Fuji's
to Canon.
Great, yeah.
Once I got my, once I really got into the business aspect of it, Canon's been great to me.
Yeah, I'm part of that team Canon.
What Canon do you
as
have?
Well. I just have the 6D.
I love that camera.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, everyone like it's hard to keep up because now there's like the 5D Mark. I don't know what mark they're on now.
Mark
and
then, 4.
And the Mark 4 and yeah. the Canon mirrorless seems great too. There's like so many I always want to try. And
that's
like,
what I got now. I have the Canon R6. It's yes. the most amazing camera ever that I've ever had. It's amazing.
Great review. We're going to send this to Canon after.
I was going to say, I just spoke with some of the folks at Capture One. Yesterday, actually, and we were talking about cameras, and we were talking about how a lot of photographers end up being like gearheads. You think about car people and folks that are into whatever, you just get so into the gear, into the tech, and like the specific cables and all of this stuff. How fast did it take you to realize that you like constantly needed to level up with like your camera bodies and like, how quickly did you accumulate all of the cool gear that you probably have?
The gear. Yeah.
That was a tough phase as a photographer because I kept buying gear thinking it was going to make better pictures. And I learning like the gear that I had, I slowly realized that, you know, get a better lens, you know, and then slowly get a better body, a camera body, better lights for my studio. But yeah, I was at a point where every time I would buy new gear, I would just have to tell my wife it was for the house and she could use it too.
Yeah.
Because I was getting B&H boxes and stuff all the time, and she's like, another camera? And I'm like, it's not for me, it's for us.
It's for us. You know? This is our future.
Yes. This is ours.
How do you keep up with what gear to buy? Everything, like the industry changes so quickly. I think about like photography even in the past like 5 years and like how things are changing. How do you keep up?
To be honest, for a while I would just see what I could buy to make my work better. Like maybe I needed better lights. Like I switched from lights that were plug-in lights to, you know, battery operated so I can move around into my location, my studio location better. But I got the Canon R6 and I have not all of them, but most of the L lenses. And I kind of look at it now like I don't really need to upgrade because it's not broken, so I don't need to fix it. But when I was shooting with like the 50, nifty 50, I realized, you know, when I want that Canon 50 that opens up to 1.2, you know, I want to get the more bokeh, you know what I mean? So now I'm at a point where I don't really need to buy anything.
Once you like find your niche and you're like, these
right.
are the types of photos that I want to make, then like, that's
I kind of miss buying some of the stuff though. I love seeing the checkout cart on B&H. I'm like, oh, it's such a, you know, waiting for a new lens or something is like, it's like Christmas.
Yeah, exciting. They're released.
New toys. Yeah. New toys are always
new toys.
if you, what I love about also, same with Christopher, your kind of introduction and how you got into photo was a lot of just like self-discovery and going through equipment and figuring out the combo of what works and what equipment works to shoot the types of things that you like. If you were going to put together a starter kit, so think about a full kit for a beginning photographer that was like, oh, I really want to get into portrait photographer, I want to shoot people, what would you put in that kit for these folks?
I would start out with a Canon Rebel and an 85 and just master that and then step up from the Rebel to, I mean, I love the 6D. I had the 6D and then went to the 5D Mark IV, but to me an 85 will really show you that got the perfect amount of distortion. And I think it all really, a lot of it comes down to editing too, because you can shoot with a lot of cameras, a lot of lenses, but if you can't really edit it, it doesn't really make sense. So editing, I think, is really big too as well.
I think that you definitely have a style with your portraiture. And I was like wondering if you could describe that style.
So to me, I always describe mine as very clean. Like I keep it as simple as I can with the edit, because when someone comes to me, they just want a picture of themselves. They don't want me to get fancy. You know, sometimes I get a little fancy if it's for me or if I'm posting it to my social media accounts. But I keep it very clean, very simple, and very even lighting. And that usually comes out to a perfect picture to me.
Something I've noticed with you is that you really do know how to light people. Mm-hmm. Your lighting skills, I think, are really phenomenal.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, especially with, like, looking through your portfolio with everyone's different skin tones, you have, like, really fair people to, like, really dark people, and everyone is lit really well, and I think, like, that is really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. Like, even in Hollywood and movies, you're like, wow, like, you have, like, two people in the same shot, but, like, they're not lit well.
Right.
But that's something I've seen in your work. It's like, you really dialed in how to light people and how to light people in, like, really interesting ways to, like, make them look their best. It's really nice.
Thank you very much. That took me a long time to learn, because for a while I could never get the lighting correct, and I just kept going on YouTube and figuring it out and seeing what worked with people. Like, I would use friends and, you know, people that I know, and tell them, just, can you come in the studio and sit there for an hour? And then I always tell them, if I make it big, you know, then I'll repay them. But that hasn't happened yet.
Next step. One step at a time. It's underrated in a sense that I think people don't, they're like, oh, set up a couple lights. Here's a colored light. Cool. Great. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you face when lighting people? Let's maybe start there, like some of the major difficulties with lighting people. And then if you have any like tips or tricks on like lighting techniques that you feel like work across the board.
The most important thing to me is when I'm lighting somebody, I want to see the catch lights in their eyes. Because if you don't have the catch lights, the person looks, you know, emotionless. There's no motion. If you have the catch lights in the eyes, so when I dial in my first light, I want to see it in the top corner of the eye. And then I dial in my second light, I want to see those. I want to see the soft boxes in their eyes. And then I bring a reflector in. Because once the person's face is lit, all of it comes down to editing. But if you can light them good, it makes it a lot easier. Long time I couldn't edit because I couldn't light somebody. Like, there's no bringing back harsh parts of skin. It doesn't matter how good of an editor you are, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Better photos make for better editing. Yeah, you got to get it right in camera first, and then you can get that post-processing done. The less you have to save in the post-processing, the better.
That makes sense. I know. I'm looking at your portfolio too, and it's like, yeah, if the lighting's wrong and there's a really heavy shadow and it's a really dark, you can't adjust those levels to get that back.
I've had it happen before too, where I've had people come in and I get home and, you know, when I'm driving home, I'm like, wow, I'm such a great photographer, you know, just hyping myself up. And I get home and I'm like, oh boy, I need to get back to the drawing board because the lighting wasn't great. Or, you know what I mean? When you're looking at the back of the camera, it looks perfect. But when you see it on a big screen, you're like, yeah, it was very humbling.
The LCD on cameras lies to you so much.
it's the worst lie ever.
It really is. Like, I've done a lot of event photography. That's like where I do most of my work nowadays. And I get like a few shots and I'm like, oh, heck yeah, I got it. This event is covered. And then I get home and look at them. I'm like, this is out of focus. This is not even in focus.
That happened to me one time. I got the Canon 51.2 and I shot a family session. I shot it down at the beach at 1.2 the whole session. I was looking at the back of the camera and I was like, I can retire from my, look how good of a photographer this is. I'm amazing. I got home and there was nothing in focus, not one photo.
Yeah,
and I had that sharpened slider. I had the sharpened slider all the way to the right, and I couldn't bring it back to life. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. This is tough.
That was years ago. Yeah. Yeah. That was tough. That was a learning lesson.
Photography learning lessons are like big, and they sit heavy on your conscience because you're like, wow, I messed that up.
Like, I didn't know if I, like, after that happened, after I shot the family, it was around Thanksgiving. Like, I kept thinking, should I buy them Christmas gifts? Because I felt so bad about doing that shoot at 1.2, you know what I mean? I didn't have any photos. I didn't know what to deliver to them. And they're still friends with me on Facebook to this day, so I think they forgave me.
They're all right.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some good ones in there. And everyone's looking at photos on their phones nowadays anyways. So, you know, the phone is kind of like, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Only you're going to know.
You're like, it's a mood. This slightly out of focus. It's actually the whole vibe we're going for here. It's very artsy.
Right.
Roll with me, people. Come on.
Right.
So that's maybe like one of your like learning moments. Can you tell us about a shoot you feel like you really nailed it?
So a shoot that I really nailed it, I'll say that I shot at I live in Connecticut, so we live next to a casino, and it was a hip-hop artist, and I was given the opportunity to shoot him on stage. Nice. And that shoot really boosted my confidence and sitting, because there's no redos, he's not looking at me, the artist, you know, I'm just there, and I have to see what I'm made of. And that moment there, that moment really showed me that I can do it. I got a couple side shots with like the 24 to 70 and a lot of wide angle stuff that I got to use that looks amazing for concert photography. It was so good. I still share the photos to this day when they pop up in my memories.
But a lot of shows have really excellent lighting, a lot of like cool colored stage lighting and stuff. Do you feel like, again, not being in a situation where you're not controlling the lighting and there's like show lighting, entertainment lighting, was that easy to work with, difficult to work with?
It's tough. It's just like shooting a wedding to me, because you don't know when you go inside of a church or you're at a venue and there's no lighting or it's yellow lighting. You got to be able to think on your feet, because there's no redo. They're not going to redo the kiss. They're not going to redo the vows. That's also why I don't do weddings anymore. Weddings are very tricky. But weddings will show you exactly what kind of photographer you are.
I had to shoot a wedding once, and it was only, I've only done one. I was so flipping nervous for it. When it came to the kiss, I'm pretty sure I was the only one who saw the kiss, because I was just like so nervous. I really wanted to get that shot. So I got up there, I just snapped the shots and ran away. I think, but it was, they're very nerve wracking because like you said, you can't redo anything. You gotta think on your feet.
Right. A, you can't be like, hold, could you repeat that? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Do you not? I wasn't sure. Could you made a funny face when you said that. Can we redo this? And then also, that's high stakes. I also used to work in special events and do design. And so we used to design a lot of weddings and design a lot of very expensive weddings. I have had very lengthy conversations about napkins, things I never hope to speak of again. But it's a very high stakes thing. It's a very emotional moment. And oftentimes, really, at the end of a day, from a wedding person, all you have are your foggy memories and photos. So to be that professional that needs to go in and capture this, that is... I fully understand why no photographer shoot. It's got to be stressful, super stressful.
Very stressful.
So your work now, you don't do a lot of like event stuff, weddings, and it's funny that you talked about like the shoot that you nailed was a concert, because like when I look at your work, it's very controlled. When did you switch from like that event stuff to your studio work?
Actually, it was like a couple months after I shot that, I realized that I love shooting people. And I knew the next step was getting a studio. So I rented a studio in a town next to me. It was 10 by 15. It was a very small studio, but it was tiny actually. And I got some lights. I learned lighting. bought the paper, bought everything. And then as I slowly got better, I moved over to a studio in my town I share with a beauty salon here. And that's what really locked me in is once I started shooting, I like controlling the light. Like I like to have full control of my photo because I don't like to get home or wonder how the picture is going to come out. Usually when I leave a session or shoot at my studio, I know what I'm going to get because, you know, I've been doing it for a while. So it's more, it takes away the pressure in a way.
Sure.
Wow. What a pro move putting your studio in a, do you say a salon?
So it's funny. The girl that owns the salon is my next door neighbor. They do lashes.
Oh, you know, like, very yeah. cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and it's been great because they bring everybody over to me for photos. So it just, yes, it's probably the best thing ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That yeah. That's great.
How to business 101.
There it is.
Location, location, yeah. location.
Location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. You had reached out. I was like, oh, this is great. And we do a lot of research. We always like to look back through people's work and see what they do. One of the things outside of your portrait photography, of course, that was like the first thing that caught our eye. I love product photography. And there were some shots that you have of like boots. And so Danner boots, we're in the Pacific Northwest, right? I think everybody's got some Red Wing or Danner boots.
I don't. I need some.
Well,
anyway, sorry.
This is the time. tell us a little bit about what got you into wanting to do product photography and maybe some of the differences. You know, we talked a little bit about shooting that can, you know, like what are some of the differences that you've experienced between people versus non-people or, well, so product photography because there are feet in these boots, so.
That's actually something I'm in currently right now is I'm trying to get out of my creative comfortable zone because I know I can't grow if I only shoot headshots of people. That'll just be, I'm very comfortable and I don't want to be comfortable because now it's become like I can do way more than that. So I reached out, that's Thursday Boots based out of New York City. They sent me a bunch of boots and I shot them and then people were surprised. They're like, I thought you only shoot people. And I told them, you know, I want to show that I can do more than that. So I shot the boots, and product photography is very different because I shot for a local brewery and I got home and I had glares on all the cans, and that is a nightmare to edit. I don't know if you've ever edited a glare off of a beer can, but it's very tough.
Yeah, hot spots are no good.
Hot spots are no good. I have the softbox right in the can and it's very tough, but now I like a challenge. So I spent 3 days editing a photo and I like that challenge. It makes me think, it makes me learn my lighting better, and makes me all around better.
Wow, 3 days. Yeah, I bet the next time you shoot a can, you're going to do it a lot differently.
I actually couldn't even use the photo because I couldn't get it perfect, which is still bothers me to this day. But I learned from it, and I know I need to have a better lighting setup for that.
Yeah, it's funny with product photo because it has to be
perfect. Right.
Because like you're like, okay, I can control everything. So it has to be like a very certain way. And that part is like really, that's like, it's super nerve wracking. Yeah. Why I never got into it.
I like it because actually we have a baby due in a month. Me and my wife have our first kid due.
Heck
so
yeah.
I want to have something. Thank you. I want to have something I can do at home where I don't want to bring people into the house. I can shoot products. Sure. And I've had a couple companies reach out. So this is going to be nice because I can do a makeshift studio in the living room.
That's
when
great.
She allows it.
Yeah, super flexible. yeah. And it's not video, so baby can be babbling or crying or being
there
adorable.
You go. Yeah.
And it doesn't mess with the photo, so that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. As you've been getting into product photography, and again, these boots, I will make sure to share links to your portfolio and your website in our show notes. The boots just looked great, and as like I'm a big sneakerhead, I'm a lover of shoes. I was like, ooh, I don't have those. And it's nice when you see like leather is such a rich material, and like I think lighting a product properly makes it look even better. Going kind of between product photography and then your portraits, was there anything that you learned through the process of shooting products that has now informed your process when you shoot people and do portraits?
Yeah, lighting wise, and definitely using modifiers and diffusers, anything to pop some light, you know, maybe a reflector or a foam board. With products it's a slower process, but it's more tedious because there's no, I mean, there are redos, but when you get home, you want to have the right lighting on the product, right shadows. And products are, to me, a different different than a person, because a person can make the photo. So you got to really make the lighting pop on a product to make it, you know, bring it to life and someone want to buy it. There's millions of brands out there. I mean, there's millions of people as well, but with headshots or, you know, sometimes people only come once a year with products that could supplement my headshot work.
100%. Yeah. And I think from a business standpoint, again, being diverse, being able to shoot anything, it can only be beneficial, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's because you don't want people to think you can only do one thing. And like, that's wasted talent, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been talking about for about 30 minutes here. Do you want to take a quick break? And we'll be back right after this.
This podcast is brought to you by the team at the Wacom Experience in Portland, Oregon. The Wacom Experience is equal parts showroom, creative space, and classroom. We're open to the public and are a great place to hang out, get some work done, or take your creativity to the next level. To stay up to date on what's happening at the Wacom Experience PDX, along with information on upcoming events and workshops, make sure to follow us on social media. Our link in bio can be found in the show notes. If you can't make it to Portland, you can find us streaming 5 days a week on Twitch, and you can also find us on Discord. Join the team and our online community of artists, creatives, and all-around lovely people, and share your artwork, learn about creative resources, or get constructive feedback on anything you're working on. You can also get the inside scoop on this podcast. The Wacom Experience PDX is located at 1455 Northwest Irving Street in Portland, Oregon. If you're in the area, stop by and say hi.
I've seen you do some film work in your Instagram work, and I was like wondering what kind of relationship you had with film versus digital.
I love film for personal work, like pictures of my family. I love shooting in black and white. Those pictures mean more than anything to me, because the feeling of film, especially black and white film, is so hard to replicate. You could do it digitally, but it's just not the same. Like the grain from film, especially medium format, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, you're shooting medium format. Is it a Mamiya that you're shooting with?
RB67, yeah.
Cool. I have not shot with a Mamiya. It's something I've always wanted to. I have a Rolleiflex that I freaking love to shoot with.
Oh, I love
with.
That camera,
and
yeah.
I don't know what it is. Like, maybe you can put it into better words, but for whatever reason, when I shoot film, it just feels more important
for
whatever reason.
It slows the process down because I only have 10 shots on my Mamiya. So I know there's no redos. I have to, and it's expensive too. It's very pricey.
So expensive.
It's the price of film right now. But when I shoot with film, I have it's a feeling once you're holding the camera, because the camera's old. It's just, it really brings you into the scene or whatever you're capturing. And then when you see the scans, it's amazing to see the scans on film.
When you get that one shot and you're like, oh man, I nailed it. That feels good. Because like so often, like I'll shoot rolls of film and I'm like, if I can get one good shot out of a roll of film, I feel like that's my goal. Like, I made it, you know? I was like, yes, I got it. It only took me, like, 36 tries, but I got it. On the Rolleiflex, I only have 12 shots, and so it's, like, even more. Yeah.
The 10 shots are so – it's so intense with the 10 shots because
right.
the roll is – I think they're up to $80 for 5 rolls of portrait of 400. And to get it developed, jeez. I actually sent my film out that way to Portland.
I was going to say, you go to Blue Moon.
I go to Photo Visions. They're in Salem.
Salem,
Oregon. Really? Yeah.
Shout out.
You know what? I would bet anything that they actually, any kind of black and white that they get, I bet they send it to Portland, because so many shops around here like rely on this one shop in Portland. If you ever come here, you have to go to Blue Moon Camera and Machine. Like, shout them out.
I can't wait to visit there, Portland. It looks so amazing. Yeah.
I was wondering, maybe we can talk a little bit about process, because like when we think about like photos and, as you know, just going into film, when you're trying to get that one shot, when you are taking a photo, you're literally clicking a button and like that's the culmination of your work right there. It's like that's the image that you get. But I was wondering if you could like talk a little bit about like the steps that you take, especially with like your studio work, that you need to like get to that taking of the shot, like working with models, maybe even like going into like makeup or all that. Like, how do you go from like an idea of getting a photo to actually getting it?
So for me, I always dial in with no lights and I get my settings there. And then I've done it so many times, I know exactly where to position my lights and what power to have. But I always start with one light. I get that one light perfect. And if I'm going to add a second light, add that second light in, add the third light in. But I try to keep it as simple as I can. So if I can get away with one light, I love the way one light setups look. So I do that. And then I put the person there. I usually dial everything in before they come. I'll stand in front of the camera, get my lighting as close as I can, and then, you know, refine it as they as they're sitting in front of me or standing in front of me.
Sounds like you need a mannequin.
I've been thinking about getting one because a lot of people do have a mannequin that they use so that when the client comes in, you're not like, hold on 1 second, let me set my lights up.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Getting everything like set up ahead of time. And I imagine like having that salon there is like nice for like your talent to like come in, maybe use some mirrors and.
Oh yeah. There's tons of mirrors. They have all the girl supplies, like, you know, to get rid of flyaways and, you know,
never
all
ending. It's a never ending thing. If you have curly hair, your whole head is a flyaway. That happened to me yesterday.
That's probably my number one trick on using the Wacom tablet is I always flip the photo upside down and it makes editing the flyaways absolutely easier to me. I posted that on Twitter today and people were like, why is the photo upside down? And I'm like, it's a more natural motion when you're editing upside down because you're not locked into the person, you're locked into the outer layers of the hair.
Do you have any kind of like dream projects that you want to work on?
Yeah.
Dream projects, to be honest, I would love to. I'm a big fan of Mariah Carey, so this is random, but I'd love to photograph her in concert, you know, if she ever has another concert again, or a big celebrity like that, a Mariah Carey or like a Jay-Z or somebody like that.
I can guarantee Mariah Carey has zero flyaways, please. Let's just recognize it.
I will
she
say
will be
this.
Flawless in every photo.
When I bought the microphone, I posted it and I said, hey, I'm going to be on a podcast. People thought I got it for singing because I always post me singing Mariah Carey in my stories. I was like, no, it's actually serious.
Mariah, if you're listening,
see that?
You.
That was going to be like one of my questions is like, if you could photograph anyone, who would it be? Any others that come to mind?
She's the only one that's locked in right now. Who else would I want to photograph? I'd like to do maybe like some NBA players or sports, you know, because I know how I would like people on a court if it was just them in front of the basketball hoop. I would bring in different gels. Like I have the perfect ideas for them. So maybe somebody, you know, like a star athlete, you know, not just basketball, baseball. I could picture it in a stadium, soccer field.
Really being able to light a big location like that would be a lot of fun.
That was my first dream, really, as a photographer, was to shoot sports. Like, I wanted to shoot for ESPN.
Oh, cool.
I feel like sports photography is such a... People are moving so fast. Like, ridiculously
it's very tough.
Fast. So difficult. I always watch, like, the photographers that are on the sidelines during a basketball game getting trampled.
I want one of those, like, 400 million.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
They have one. It's, like, $20,000. I'm like, gosh, it's amazing. It's like a 600 f4 lens, and it's incredible. Like, that's another thing I would love to shoot is wildlife.
I mean, it's so funny, like, how our phone technology is getting so much better, and like my phone takes great photos, but it's still like nothing compared to sitting down with like a real photographer and getting your portrait done.
That's always my thing as a photographer, when people say, oh, I took this with my cell phone, and I don't want to say anything, but it's like the camera's way better.
Yeah, I can tell.
I took this with my iPhone 14. You're like, I know you did.
Yeah. Good job. That's a great start. Well, and I think when we start to look at tools and like the tools access that people have access to now, I think it's great that people can shoot on their phones. I'm glad that people can capture everything in videos, and it's super cool. Again, for like small stuff, if I'm sharing with people, my camera takes great, or my phone takes great photos, but you lose that creative vision into like, here you talk about how much care you put into lighting. I don't do that on my phone. I don't do that with my phone, right? You've like lost that human creative input. And I actually just realized, I don't know, Christopher, if you have this on your Pixel as well, but I can remove people from the background. It's like a new filter. And so I was testing it. And as someone, so I used to, back in the days of yore, still post the 1900s, but I used to do marketing and branding, and I was also editing photos for a website. So we had a web team that was building the websites, and we were doing the website for a roofing company. This is extremely interesting photography of roofs. But the photographer would go out, and he was a really old school. He was like just an analog, a great photographer, but he didn't know editing. And I was like, oh, I can edit these. So I did a lot of clouds, like replacing skies and getting rid of phone lines, which was my introduction to photo editing. But I still feel like what I could do in CS6, Photoshop CS6, is still better than what my phone could do now, removing people from the background. So it's like, yes, it's cool. I'm glad we have these tools readily available, but I still think there's that like pro level quality that you're not quite going to get on your phone.
Right. Right. And I think that what you said right there is that pro level quality is we're still like not quite there yet. And like, you can't be, cause like a lot of it is like lighting. And I think like, again, that's what makes your photo stand out so much, Josh, is like, you are a master lighter. I'm like, get this guy on a film set and just have him be the DP on the next big budget Hollywood.
Featuring Mariah Carey.
I knew you were going to say that. But the good thing about the phone is people always have it on them.
Yes.
So, accessibility is huge. Yeah, that's big, because I think that gets people into photography, because they're like, imagine what I could do if I had a camera.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I think anything to get people into wanting to create stuff is, I'm a big advocate for that.
So you work a lot with models and talent and people, and I was wondering if you had any tips for working with people.
That's good. Yeah.
Because a lot of people are just into landscapes or product photography. Not everyone photographs shooting other people. So any tips?
So a big thing for me, I actually did it today on my Instagram. I photographed myself. I got in front of the camera because I want to be able to know what a client or somebody feels like with the camera in front of them, because not a lot of people like to have their pictures taken. There's very few people that like, I love having my picture taken, you know? But to me, the biggest thing is I always tell the person when they come in, what do you like to listen to? Like, what's your music that makes you, you know, get into your own vibe? Or I tell them to bring somebody that can make them, you know, get out of their comfort zone, you know, or make them feel comfortable on a session. But I usually just tell people, just breathe. Like, you're probably never going to see me again, you know, if you're coming in for a headshot. So chances are, you know what I mean? Put your best foot forward here and just be yourself. That's the number one thing, is be yourself. And usually once they get comfortable, the photos come out even better than they thought. But the music's key. Great. Like, because I tell people, whatever music makes you feel like you're at home or you're just having fun with friends, like, we'll put it on. I've listened to tons of different types of music at the studio.
That's a great tip. That's a really good.
Music is nice. Sets the mood.
I'm going to remember that next time.
When do you know that you've gotten the shot?
I know, like, right after I take the photo, once I see it on the back of the camera, like, once I just get a gist of it, I know right away. Like, usually it happens, like, yesterday I had a headshot session, and within 10 minutes I knew we already had the headshot we were going to use. Even though the client didn't know that, I knew right away. I could just see the photo. I knew that was the one, that's the best one, you know what I mean? Just from having that eye after years of doing it.
Totally. That must, it's so nice if you can get that shot early, because you're like, okay, everything else from this point is like...
Yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah, it's like the cherry on top, it's bonus. You're like we can like mess around and do other stuff and like take some risks that you normally wouldn't. When I'm doing like event photography and I'm like, okay, I have 10 shots that I know are good. Let's just get some weird ones too. And like that always feels good. Yeah.
Let's get these weird ones.
Well, try something that maybe you like, I don't know, get a super low one from the floor, or like try something go high or something. You're like, okay, I have this freedom to like mess around and experiment at this point. So, because I know... You know, you zoomed in on the little LCD on the back of the screen, and you're like, okay, everything is in focus. You just know. And, it's nice. It takes
I
that
feel like
off.
next time I see you climbing up on the cube chairs or something, I'll be like, he's done it. He's got all the photos he did. I'm gonna remember that.
Now. Just send me home after
yeah.
that.
Get out.
What's something about portrait photography that most people don't know?
How hard it is to edit. It's very hard to edit a headshot because there's no, it's just a person. There's no landscape where you can zoom out, zoom in. When you got like a headshot, that's that person and that's, they're in front of you. If you can't get the flyaways, if you can't get the skin texture, or if you do too much editing, it all is just on full display, especially with the portrait.
How do you balance, or where do you find that balance? You know, you'd mentioned some of your early editing was very avatar, like just overly edited, like too much smoothing. How do you balance that, especially on skin, like of that fine line of this is edited perfectly, but it still is natural without like going too far?
I know if I've spent too long on a photo, I just restart it because it's going way overboard. The less I take on the photo, I know that I'm keeping it more realistic than if, you know, I used to spend 2 hours on a photo and then I get done and I'm like, I didn't know who the person was because it's so over edited, you know, because you want everything to be perfect. But the more you do it, you realize that the less work, sometimes that's better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can definitely like make someone too smooth.
Oh, I've done it plenty. I've done it so many times.
It's always like a nice reference point too, because like when you do take it too far, you can like go there and you're like, okay, I don't go this far. And like sometimes I'll do that, like when I'm like editing or something like that, I'm like, this needs like more contrast than it, so let's bump up the contrast like to make it look terrible. Let's make it look terrible for half a second and then you know what, and then walk it back. So it's like there is like some method to that madness, but it's not very good when, you know, you're on the clock and you're like need to edit, you know, 100 more photos or whatever. But so it makes sense, and it is like a learning process, and you do get better at it over time.
I'm thankful for those days that I over edited because it showed me, you know, that it's okay to make mistakes and I'm going to learn from them as a photographer, you know, because a lot of people, when I was editing the avatars, they were cheering me on. And now as I see my work, I'm like, all right, look how far I've come and look how much I've dedicated to learning. So I love that feeling, you know, the journey of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel like, so you'd mentioned this before, I think one of the difficult things when working with people, I am someone that I hate having my picture taken. Like, it steals my soul. I just don't like it. It's very difficult. Very rarely have I gone in to have headshots or have to have be photographed in a professional setting. And so, like, I would trust you as a professional photographer to edit the photo so I look good. I'm like, you're not going to make me look like a hot mess. But have you ever had anyone, you know, you deliver a final edit and they're like, could you make my teeth a little whiter? Could you make my skin smoother?
I always tell people right away, if you don't like the photo, just come back to me and tell me. It doesn't hurt my feelings because, you know, I'm the same way with my own photos, you know. And I'll do whatever I got to do. If I got to bring them back into the studio, whatever I got to do to make sure that they're happy with the final product, that doesn't bother me, you know, re-editing or reshooting it, whatever I got to do.
Do you feel like you have to, or have you ever had to explain to someone? Because, again, I think if you over-edit a photo, then they do start to maybe look too smooth, too cartoony. Have you had to explain to someone, like, if I go 2 steps further, it's really not going to look like you? Or do you just try to reshoot?
As crazy as it sounds, a lot of people love that look. Like when people come in the studio, they're like, make me look as smooth as possible. And I try to explain to them, you don't really want to do that because if someone sees you in public, they want to know that that's you, not, you know what I mean?
Right. These Snapchat filters are heavy, let me tell you. I look very young in these.
When I first got my my Pixel, I didn't realize like the beauty filter was on for my camera. I kept taking like photos of myself. And I was like, "What is happening here?" Like, I just thought it was just like I didn't know what it was.
Glowing,
you. I know, man. I look great today.
You're like, I am shot in sepia tone. This is glorious.
And I toggle it off, and I like, oh. Oh no.
I'm like, dang, I knew I didn't sleep well, but I didn't know, like, I looked I didn't sleep well.
I know.
I think that's the thing with nowadays, everybody wants to look perfect,
right?
Like, nobody except, you know, even today I had to, you know, when I uploaded my photo, like sometimes, you know, I fix my hairline, or I'll fix, you know, if I have a lazy lid, I'll try to make it look alive. Yeah. You know, anything. Even myself, I do that. You know what I mean? So I imagine when a client's paying, they want to look, you know, especially if they're a realtor, they want to have look sure. amazing, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. I also suffer from that lazy lid scenario. Whenever I smile, it's like, why am I closing one eye?
You know what's funny? So one time I uploaded a photo and somebody reached out and there was an eye doctor. And they're like, just to let you know, we have a procedure where they can make your look. I was like, wow, that's amazing. The power of social media. They told me there was a procedure to make my eyelid less lazy, and I'm like,
oh, what?
Well, thank you.
You're like, you must be hungry for work, sir. I look great, thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna Google this later.
Just as a caveat, none of our faces need any corrective surgery. We all look great how we are. That's the end of all I have to say. Although I will whiten my teeth because I drink a lot of coffee and tea. It's fine. I'll touch that up in Photoshop.
That's an easy fix.
It's fine. Yeah, you know. I sort of wanted to dive into a little bit of what your editing process is. I think we spoke a bit about Team Intuos Pro. Shout out to our favorite Wacom tablet. But yeah, tell us a little bit about what's your process for editing? What tools do you use?
So I edit on the iMac, the big screen iMac.
Nice.
And Intuos Pro Medium has been a game changer for my editing. To be honest, when I edited with a mouse and when someone told me, hey, grab a tablet and just struggle and learn that, take 2 weeks. And that 2 weeks was tough because I couldn't get used to it. It was very hard when I edited for, you know, 6 years on a mouse. Once I grabbed the tablet, I preach it to people. And, you know, I don't even work for Wacom, but I preach people all the time on Twitter. And I tell them, I say, listen, if you're grabbing any tools, grab a tablet. It took my editing from this is okay to I'd like to shoot with you and come back over and over because the editing with the tablet is such a natural motion. And I tell people this all the time because I see people struggle with editing. I'm like, once you grab a tablet, it's just a different mindset. It's a different editing process, different motion with your hand and everything.
Mm-hmm. It definitely makes editing more fun. That's for sure.
It does. It does for sure.
So this is going to turn into like a Wacom sales pitch in a half a second. But we have like a showroom where we are in Portland and we have all of our products out for display. Yeah. And if anyone ever comes in and I say, you know, what do you do? They say, oh, I'm a photographer. Like, I immediately like throw a lot of the screens out. And I'm like, here's your Intuos tablet. Like, this is all you need. Because like so many photographers have that trusted monitor that they use. And I'm like, you don't need another one. You just need this like Intuos tablet that can be like, you can even get a small one for like 60, 80 bucks. And
That's probably my biggest regret is not getting one earlier in my photography career. It would have stopped a lot of the pain of editing with the mouse, you know, because your wrist hurts with the mouse. Nothing against mouses. But that feeling, you cramp up after a while. But with the pen, I could be up here all day instead of doing stuff.
You end up with these crimped witch hands. It's true. I think from an ergonomic factor, especially when you're editing hundreds of photos at a time and going through, you know, a bank of photos, you're sitting at your computer, your workstation for 6 to 8 hours, or even just 4 hours. It's really hard on you physically. I mean, sitting alone is hard. So, and then you're editing in Photoshop. Is that right?
Yeah, I edit in Photoshop.
Nice. Tried.
And Photoshop, that's another thing, just like the tablet. It took me a little while to learn, but once you edit in Photoshop, people don't realize how powerful it is compared to maybe a Lightroom. I think a lot of people use Capture One now as well, you know, if they're tethering on set. But to me, Photoshop, I mean, it's endless in Photoshop. You could do anything you ever wanted in Photoshop.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really can. You can get those basics down in Lightroom and Capture One. But, like, even the simple stuff, like the clone tool is like so superior in Photoshop. I love that.
The clone stamp is just so powerful. But then in Lightroom, you get it and it's not the same.
It's really not.
It's not really at all.
Pretty powerful.
Everything's Photoshop nowadays, but like it's because it's fun to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you have you have so much range that you can do. I mean, any sort of digital tool is so neat, and just having that kind of endless possibility once you have that the principal photo down, right? It's a lot of in studio, it's in camera, it's with the lighting. You have everything lit well. But then when you take it in, like, you can do how many different color variations just in Photoshop, which is super rad.
See, I've had that debate before because I feel like sometimes knowing how to edit is more important than actually taking a photo. Because if you know how to edit, you could save so many bad photos.
Sure.
I see him looking at me. He's wondering why I'm saying that.
I would disagree, but, you know, I'm not the retoucher.
But I'll explain why I say that, because anybody can take a photo, like, mm-hmm. eventually anybody can take a photo, but not everybody can edit to bring that photo to life.
Sure.
That's more of the stance I'm taking on it, you know what I mean? I like this.
Sure. They go hand in hand. I mean, what I've noticed is, like, the more I edit, the better photographer I am. And
okay, that's a better way to put it. There you go.
The more I shoot, the better editor I am.
Sure.
Because, like, the entire time I'm shooting, I'm like, okay, this is a gift for future Christopher, and I need to make sure that these are great. So, you know, so editor Christopher has a good time. Because, like, if I'm editing just, like, really bad photos and that I took, I'm always just like, wow, past Christopher was a jerk. And, like, this is just really bad.
That's and, a better way know, to put it.
Yeah, you know, it's just helping yourself out.
Yeah.
And they definitely go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But, like, editing is definitely, I would say, a steeper learning curve than shooting is. For me, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, editing, for sure. Editing's been tough to learn, and there's so many roller coasters of it where you think you got your workflow down, and then you don't have your workflow down. You love your work. You thought you find your style. You didn't find your style. And you're always constantly learning, because I think you get better as an editor, and makes you a better photographer, because you know, listen, I don't want to edit those shadows. Let me light this person better.
Sure.
Or let me get those highlights better in camera. Because I know in post, it's going to be easier for me to work with.
So would you say your style comes more from your editing than from your shooting?
I would say so, yeah. It's weird to say, I like editing better than shooting, in a way, because I know editing, when I'm editing in Photoshop or wherever, once I sit down in front of my computer, it's my own world. I can take a photo that's just like, oh, okay, this is a regular photo. And when I edit it, I'm like, holy smokes, look what I did to this photo.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I love that toggle of, like, before and after. It's like,
some people don't like editing because they rather shoot, you know what I mean? So they might outsource their work. I love sitting down in front of the computer, just putting on some music and just getting away with my editing, and it's amazing.
To go back, now that you guys have joined in the center of the ring, to go back, but I think we're just gonna bring it all together. The joy that I feel like you have in editing is because you're a very good lighter and you're a very good photographer. And I think, to Christopher's point, I know you're a very good retoucher. You're very good at editing. No one wants to edit crappy photos, right? But because you know that those photos were already good to start with, they're just going to get better. And I feel like those two are the editing and the photography are always going to go hand in hand and inform one another. And like what Christopher was saying, like, you learn so much when you do both that to have to, like, salvage terrible photos feels really taxing.
I think you pulled it all together, because maybe my point was like, if you edited bad photos, I get what he's saying. But I think knowing to kind of say more on what I was saying is, like, knowing that I know how to edit, I could maybe get away with not such a good photo. Not a bad photo, but if I make a mistake, I know it's fixable. Like, if I know I didn't get her curls down on the side of her head, I know I can take care of that.
Totally. And I think that's where those learning things of, you're like, oh man, like, for some reason this didn't capture in studio, but my editing skills are so good now that, like,
no. But always try to get it right in camera if you can, because it saves you a lot of time.
Sure.
You see that? I did absolutely. That. Chris, that was for you.
Thanks, I appreciate that. You know what? Well, it's funny. It's like, I don't like studio work is actually like kind of like where I stopped with photography. I don't have a lot of like studio expertise, and like I know enough where I can like hang and have a conversation, but like I that's not where my work is. And
you should,
so
you should get into
I'm like
it.
I know I've always wanted to, and I'm like I might enjoy editing more if I did more studio work, because you get those like just super strong photos and you get that control.
It's amazing. I'm telling you, get into studio work, get a couple lights. You'll love it.
I'll hit you up with any questions I have.
Yes, I'm all for it.
At the end of the podcast, we always ask everyone the same question. Is the name of the podcast is Why Do You Create?
I create for me. I love the feeling that I get from holding a camera in my hand and bringing a photo to life, or just hopping in my car and going to shoot, you know, like with my film camera, or even when I'm going to my studio. That time to me is like the best thing, and it's the most calming experience for me. Like setting my lights up in my studio, listening to music, that's such an amazing time. Sitting in front of my computer, editing, listening to music, it just, you don't worry about anything else. Anything that happened throughout the day when I'm editing or creating, all that goes away.
It's the Zen.
Yeah, right on.
It's the Zen moments of creativity.
Yeah, and it's like, I like that how you started off. I create for me, and that's really great. I'm actually like, I'm weirdly gonna say this, but I'm excited for when your kid is born and like you're gonna be able to like photograph like this newborn baby.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, everyone's got their baby photos on Facebook and Instagram, but I'm like, this professional photographer over here, he's gonna have a great time. And when you say like, I edit and I shoot and I create for me, having like this experience with your newborn, I think is gonna be really great. And I'm excited for you.
I already got all my Polaroid film. You know, I have the Polaroid. I got the Kodak film.
Yes.
I got my black and white Kodak. So I'm ready. You know, I already asked, you know, what am I allowed to bring? You know what I mean? Can I bring a camera after the baby's born? Am I allowed to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not about the camera. It's about the baby. And I understand that. Because I know she's going to listen to this. Yeah.
But at the same time, this film is for us. Remember, this is.
Yes.
But I think like
this gear is for us. This film is for us.
She's going into labor, and you're setting up lights on the side.
Yeah, that's how it looks. Because I said, listen, I know these are going to be pictures for us that will last a lifetime. No, not the delivery photos, but
absolutely. Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Her holding the baby for the first time. I already have a lookbook, not a lookbook. Like a notebook of shots that I know I want to get, like the first time holding the baby's feet.
I love this.
Everything.
Yeah. If people want to follow you, how would they do that? Yeah. Or book you?
You can follow me at Joshua Jordan Photo on Instagram or JJ Photo on Twitter. And my website's joshuajordanphoto.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on with us. This was a great talk. It's always fun nerding out about camera stuff.
I love a good gear-focused talk, too. We haven't had one in a while, so that was good.
Thank you so much for listening to our show. Why We Create is produced by the Wacom Experience Center in Portland, Oregon. I do the editing, Megan writes our show notes, and our music is produced by Forest Pond. If you would like more creative content, you can follow us on all the social media platforms, including Twitch. We also have a Discord channel where you can get insider info into the podcast, share your artwork, and stay up to date on everything we are doing. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.